ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Nightlife foreign correspondent.
Well, let's head overseas. Bill Birtles, the ABC's Indonesia correspondent, is with us again. And Australians in Bali for holidays have suddenly found they have to pay a $15 tourism tax on arrival in Bali, a fee that has confused some, as have the enthusiastic efforts of local police to enforce payment. The levy, which is intended to help the island cope with millions of visitors every year, was announced last year after a series of incidents involving visitors desecrating holy sites and generally behaving badly. The head of promotions for the Bali government's tourism office says it helps pay to keep Bali clean and appealing.
We hope from that tourist levy can use that money for take care, especially for the rubbish.
Well, fair enough, maybe. Bill Birtles, good evening to you. Thanks for joining us on Nightlife.
Good evening, Phil.
$15 doesn't sound like a lot. Is that a day or per visit?
That's per person for each visit. It's not each day. But, you know, look, it's not a lot of money. But if you roll in there with, a family of five, it's $15 each, including for every kid. So, it adds up a bit. It's not really the amount. It's more that Bali or Indonesia generally already has a $50 visa on arrival fee.
Right.
Now, when you compare it to the cost of, you know, visas to go to Australia and stuff, it's not much.
Nothing,
but
yeah.
The point, I guess, that some of the local vendors there make is that before the COVID pandemic, it was visa-free or sort of a free visa on arrival, pretty much what Thailand currently has. But now it's $50. But then on top of the $50, they're adding another $15. Look, it's not a huge amount of money, but instead of paying one fee when you go to Bali now, you actually have to pay two. Mm.
Why do they just stick it on the visa fee?
I asked that question too. Because the visa fee is handled by Customs and Immigration, a national agency, and it's the local provincial Bali government doing the $15 fee. And for some reason, there's a dispute by the sounds of things where they don't either seem to trust the immigrations and customs people.
As to who will trouser the fee, in other words.
Or they can't seem to get them to put the two fees together. But this is the whole point. People go in and they stump up the $50 per person and they, you know, get some sort of receipt or email and they go, all right, I've paid. And you walk past this counter when you come out of the airport at Denpasar, but it's not really noticeable. A lot of tourists just don't even see it. And you voluntarily can pay the $15 if you want, but the rule is you actually have to pay it before you leave. It's not like you have to pay it when you arrive, but even when you leave, if you haven't paid it, the head of Bali's tourism office told me that you'll still be allowed to leave.
So, Bill, they need it. They need a proper time and motion man like yourself to examine the system here, Bill, surely. I mean, why do they simply put everyone through a turnstile and, you know, if you haven't got the $15, you can't come in?
Well, I was told because the airport is run by the national authorities. There seems to be some sort of, government silo thing going on where they can't quite agree on how to enforce it. But the other thing is, so the Bali government, they're a bit wary of scaring away tourists with this tax. So they say that they're socialising it is the word they use. Softly, softly, we're just trying to make people aware of it. You should pay it. You're supposed to pay it, but we won't punish you if you don't pay it.
Mm. Well, maybe fair enough, because there is a lot of evidence of bad tourist behaviour, isn't there? I mean, tourism creates employment and money and jobs, of course. It also creates a lot of rubbish and all sorts of other things and pressure on infrastructure. I can understand the local Balinese wanting to raise some taxes off people. Governments the world over do this. It just seems like an inefficient way to do it, isn't it?
Yeah, well, this was announced last year, close to about a year ago. There were a lot of viral videos of tourists behaving badly. You know, kind of, it was mainly Russian Instagrammers, a lot of Russians in Bali. It's one of the few places where they still get a warm welcome and don't face any, you know, sanctions or bans or anything. And there were a lot of, you know, Instagrammers who were going to Bali and they were, for example, getting naked and climbing sacred trees, you know, 700-year-old sacred tree. They don't necessarily know it's a sacred tree. They just go, wow, look at this extraordinary tree. Let's get in the nude and take a photo. And then there was another guy who went up on a sacred mountain. He probably didn't know it was holy in the local Hindu culture. And he dropped his pants. And, of course, they make videos of it and put it on social media. So from the outset, they're seeking attention, these people, but it didn't go down well. A few Australians involved in this sort of stuff last year. There was a woman who the police stopped for not wearing a helmet, which you have to on motorbikes, and she gave the police officers a dressing down, and that went viral as well. It was captured on video. More recently, there was an Australian bloke who was only 19 who was caught shoplifting erectile dysfunction pills from a Bali pharmacy. He was tracked down and had to pay some money. I think he was deported. So all sorts of bad behaviour. But as part of the kind of way to mitigate the anger about it last year, they first of all put out a list of do's and don'ts, how to behave, which is all pretty obvious. But the second thing they announced is we're going to start charging people $15. And it's only now that they're implementing that charge.
Well, good luck to them. But as you say, it does seem like a bit of a turf war as to who's going to trouser the cash, stopping a more efficient collection of it. Look, on to more, on to bigger matters. The president-elect of Indonesia, Prabowo Subianto, is off to China. Now, this is his first overseas visit, and the first visit is to China. How significant is that?
Yeah, well, actually, he's already just been to China and he met China's leader Xi Jinping. It's interesting in a few ways. Prabowo Subianto is currently the defense minister of Indonesia. So it looks like this visit might have been teed up in a kind of official capacity as the defense minister. But China's Xi Jinping completely elevated it to sort of next leader level and hosted him at the Great Hall of the People and met him in the way that Xi Jinping only meets other leaders. Mm. So it was the Chinese side kind of making a big deal of it as well. Now, of course, it makes sense. I mean, Prabowo Subianto is the president-elect. He takes office in October. There is, you know, by and by, there is this process in Indonesia at the moment where the people he beat are currently lodging petitions in court and challenging the validity of his win. But no one here, I think, thinks that his victory is going to be overturned. So in a way, it makes total sense for Prabowo to go to China first because it's China that has been bankrolling some of the biggest infrastructure projects of recent years in Indonesia. Mm-hmm. And he clearly hopes that more money will flow from China. But he also has gone to Japan as well. It's not just China. Japan was number two. And it's worth noting that here in Jakarta, for example, there's this sort of long subway project. I don't mean long in terms of lines. I mean long in how many years it's taking to build. It's only got one line so far. But it's being built by the Japanese. Mm-hmm. So it's not just China. The Koreans and the Japanese are here in a big way as well. And I think Prabowo Subianto going to both China and Japan are pretty strongly signalling that he wants more funding for more projects. But he did say in Beijing that he wants closer ties with China. It's the sort of thing you'd expect him to say. But, of course, people are watching closely because of the growing rivalry in the region between China and the US.
Of course. Of course, it's the it's the issue, isn't it? Bill Birtles is with us, the ABC's Indonesia correspondent, talking about matters concerning Indonesia. Sino-Indonesian relations generally, though, are fine, aren't they? Are there any particular gruntles there?
Yeah, these days they're great. I mean, you go back to 1998 when there were the anti-Chinese riots in Jakarta as part of Suharto, the dictator Suharto's downfall. But in terms of national relationships, The president of the past decade, Joko Widodo, he's really turned to China to get investment funding and expertise and know-how. Mm-hmm. And to a large degree, he has. He's you maybe don't hear a great deal about it because it's not super exciting, but China in a big way has poured huge amounts of money into Indonesia's nickel industry, not just backing mines and processing plants, but also providing technology and equipment. Mm.
Stuffing Australia's nickel mines in the process, I must say, but anyway.
Yeah, but if you're in Indonesia, you know, it creates jobs in Indonesia, so they're happy.
Yep.
And it isn't just Chinese money backing a lot of those mines. It's also sort of technology transfers for the refining process. The high-speed rail, the fastest train in Southeast Asia, opened last year between Jakarta and Bandung. That was built by China. There is a great need for more infrastructure like that in Indonesia, Phil, even if it does break the budget, which is the problem. And so you can see why but it isn't just China, it is Japan and Korea too that are involved also in pumping money into the country, Singapore as well. The big problem, I guess, is that they're building this new capital city, which we've talked about before. It's on the island of Borneo. And so far, nobody, including China, has actually committed to putting any money into building that. Mm. And I think Prabowo and Japan, a lot of it would be trying to say, look, I'm going to keep this city going, this project going, so time to stump up some money.
Time to stump up some cash. All right. Look, just finally, the Indonesian police are investigating the biggest ever corruption case in the country's history. Well, no surprise that Indonesia's got issues of corruption and problems. That's historic and perhaps endemic. But the size of this is certainly eye-watering. The corruption case, the biggest in the country's history, involves $26 billion allegedly stolen from the state. And at the heart of the case, an A-list family who've got a mansion in Melbourne.
Yeah, what we were just talking about, if you're wondering why the Chinese and everyone else are so wary about putting money into the new capital city, it's because of cases like this where it's quite complicated, so I'll just be rather brief about it. But a businessman in Indonesia who is dubbed Indonesia's perfect husband because of his social media posts, sort of he's handsome and he's he's got a private jet, which he allegedly gifted to his two-year-old son. He's married to this actress. She's kind of famous in her own right. They got married at Tokyo Disneyland. You know, they've got this life on Instagram of just the sort of perfect, rich, super wealthy couple. But it turns out that he's been hauled in by anti-corruption investigators this week. His name's Harvey Moeis. And it's because of this state-owned mining company, which has been doing a couple of things. First of all, it's been mining in areas where it doesn't have a permit. It's a tin miner. And then the second thing is the money it's been making, allegedly, a lot of that's been misappropriated, going to a whole bunch of people, including this sort of glamorous couple with this fella Harvey Moeis. Now, he's been brought in. His wife's been brought in as a suspect. A few friends of theirs, too, are being paraded in front of the media. The total cost of the state, as you said, $26 billion over many years. It's the biggest amount in the history of Indonesian corruption cases, and there have been many. So you can see why it's causing such a stir. And one of the things that the Indonesian media is doing as it sort of pours over the history of this glamour couple is going over all their previous social media posts, including one from a few years ago showing this extraordinary mansion in Melbourne that they supposedly own. It looks like it's in somewhere like Toorak, but it's not quite clear. But it has the pool, it has the tennis court, et cetera. And there are a lot of these sorts of people in Indonesia who have absolutely no problem flaunting their wealth. And clearly it causes great anger among the general population when it's alleged that that wealth has come from corruption on this scale.
Yeah, I can imagine. Bill, always great to talk. Appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thanks, Phil.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.